Welcome to the Kingdom Life Church podcast. We hope you enjoy this message by Pastor Dustin Box. For more great content, visit klcmaine.com.
The last few weeks have been kind of fun. We've sort of been in a, not an official series, but there's been sort of a consistent theme, and it's been in this context of stewarding a move of God. A few weeks ago, Tim was preaching, and the context of how to develop and steward a life of worship, right? How to cultivate that in your own life. If you step in here and things are going crazy and you're kind of like, oh, this is weird, I'm not really sure like what to do right now, it was an amazing word. So if you are struggling in that zone and want to know more about worship, you got to listen to it because it's really, really good. Last week, Savannah and I kind of talked about how to take those encounters that you have with God and translate them into everyday life, right? Developing a listening ear. We want to continue to do that. This morning, for the last couple weeks, it's been this word that's been like just kind of like brooding over my heart, and I kind of was hesitant to actually preach it this morning because I tend to want like, you know, good encouraging, like, whoa, we're going to charge up, and this one sort of, it takes a little bit of a different angle. This morning, what I want to share, one of the biggest issues and things that will actually stop or prevent a move of God in your personal life as well as in a corporate setting. You guys ready for this? All right, Lord Jesus. Jamie's laughing at me right now. Awesome. So this is what we want to do. I want you to just take a second and think about you come into church, right? You're hanging out. God does something amazing, and you genuinely experience his presence. You genuinely encounter this place of transformation and something begins to take place in your life, right? You go out and it's amazing, it's wonderful. And then something takes place. We have this problem where we're constantly surrounded by people. Go figure, right? There's people all around us. And with people come problems. Comes problems. What happens is we end up bumping into people and we show up to church maybe on a Sunday and maybe the greeter forgot to have their coffee and had a serious face instead of a smile. And you're like, what's up with them? What's their problem? Why didn't they give me a smile this morning? Or you're walking back and after the service, you're like, I'm supposed to go to the info table. Amanda's going to be there. You go back there and she's not there. Oh no. Bum, 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 bum. This isn't right. There's supposed to be someone here, right? Come on. Or you go home, right? And your spouse, your lovely spouse, forgot to put the dishes in the dishwasher. Sorry, babe, when you're watching this later. Right? Do you know what I'm talking about? This is confession time. Lord, forgive me. Jesus, let there be peace in my home. No. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? There's this thing that we have every time we have an interaction with another person, another individual, we have this opportunity to pick up offense. We can't control the fact that our life is surrounded by people. And we're having constant interactions with them all the time. And offense is this thing that if you allow it, it will drive a wedge between you and other people. When you pick up a fence, you will build a fence between you and other people. Come on, I gotta throw in a couple of those. Come on now. You gotta let me have them. I'm gonna say it again just because Al's giving me the okay. Listen, if you're gonna pick up a fence, you will build a fence between you and other people. It's just what takes place. And there's this thing where if you let it, it will hold up. It will stop a move of God in your personal life. And offense is interesting because it's super contagious. And if you let it, it will actually begin to spread into a group of people and can hold up the presence of God moving in a practical way in a body. It's crazy how this works. You guys want to look at this a little bit more? Okay, good. Hey, Elijah, can I use you again? Okay, give it up for Elijah. Listen, fair warning, every once in a while, the youth pastor inside of me, the old youth pastor, comes crawling up to the surface. So you're going to just have to roll with me this morning, all right, you guys? Is that okay? All right, sweet. So listen, offense is like this. You walk around, you see, like, this is just, it's not that much weight. You see someone carry it, it's 45 pounds, it's not that much, right? They can swing it around, and you see people moving around with it, right? When you bump into someone, right, and something takes place, and I kind of bump into them, and I'm like, hey, and what happens? I hand it to them. The first thing you really, truly need to understand about offense is it's your choice to pick it up. If he didn't take it from me, it would have dropped to the ground and he could have moved on with his life. I mean, no, I would have told them to pick it up for the sake of the illustration. It's interesting how this works. Listen, I don't want you to, like, think that I'm minimizing places or times when you're genuinely wounded or hurt. But there is a choice to move past a place of victimization into victimhood and a victim mentality. The difference is that you can experience pain, genuine, hurtful pain, serious wounding, and it's your choice whether you're going to pick it up and it becomes something you carry along. The thing with offense that you guys need to understand is that oftentimes, offense doesn't start with some big, bold, crazy wounding. Every once in a while it will. But most of the time, if you're struggling with offense, it's going to start like this. Something small. Something small you pick up, and you choose to convince yourself that you're okay. You can walk around and, look, man, give high fives and give hugs, and he's all right. He can walk around and say hi to people. Go ahead. Walk around, say hi to some people. Do you know what I'm saying? And look, he can say hi, he can high five. It's awesome. And he begins to convince himself that he's okay. He can manage this pain in his life. He can manage this weight. When it gets a little too heavy, he can switch sides. You know, it's all right. He's okay. And he thinks that it's not doing anything to him. And he's justified. He feels convinced, like, it's okay because that was really hurtful what Dustin did. That was not right. There was an injustice there. And what happens is he comes over and I go to give him a hug and he's a little stiff. I'm like, wow, that's kind of weird. And I go, maybe someone comes over on this side and they're like, you know, this kind of like, it's kind of an awkward hug, you know, and it's weird. It's he's stiff. It's hard. It's you know, and in his mind, because he's feels justified in what he's carrying and he's convinced himself he's capable of it, it becomes the interactions he begins to experience with other people become their problem because he's managing his. He doesn't have a problem, you see, because he can carry it. It's fine. But he doesn't understand that every time someone comes to interact with them, they're not interacting with them. They're interacting with him carrying offense. And so pretty soon I come over, give him a hug or something. He's like, man, what's up with Dustin? That's kind of an awkward hug. Isn't he excited to see me? Isn't that weird? And he walks by me and he swings the kettlebell and it, oh, ow. Oh, dang. Oh, and I'm like, I don't want to hang out with him now. It's hard. It's rough. It's like he keeps bumping me, and it's rough. And pretty soon, I don't text quite as much. But guess whose problem it is? In his world, it's me. I'm the one with the problem. I'm the one who's not kind. I'm the one that's ignoring him when he walks through the hallway. I'm the one that's not giving him a smile when he sees me. I'm the one that's like pretty soon not texting quite as much or not liking his Instagram photos. I mean, you know. And what happens is he begins to build a perspective of the world that he's interacting with, that it's their problem, it's their issues, they're the ones that are rude or disrespectful or hypocritical or two-faced. That church is this way, that pastor is like this. My husband or my wife is just this kind of a person. Why? Because you've convinced yourself you can manage the weight. And if you can manage the weight, you think that you're able to interact with people in a normal way. So if you're experiencing a sort of like not normal interaction, they're definitely the one with the problem, not you. See, the problem with offense is then, as he walks around and moves around, pretty soon he's convinced himself that he can carry it. So something else happens. Another, he bumps into someone else, and because he's learned how to manage life with this, he feels justified. He feels like the world has a problem with him. They're the ones with the issue. He picks up some more. And now what takes place? In his mind, he knows that he's struggling. He knows his forearms are starting to get a little tired. He's a little stiff, and someone comes up and gives him a hug, and they're like, dude, man, like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Like, no, he's not okay. You know, and he knows it, but he's already built the perspective that everyone else has a problem. So what takes place is he interacts with someone, and it's like, oh, man, it's like, it's weird and awkward. And he sort of knows that he has a problem, but everything in his world is telling him that this person is rude or disrespectful or doesn't have time for them or is ignoring their phone calls. No, you're not done. Where are you going? Where are you going? I'm kidding. You can put him down. Give Elijah a hand. It's fun to just see how long. That starts to burn after a while, man. See, the problem is that even though in your head you know that you've been hurt and you know that, like, yeah, I'm kind of struggling maybe with a little bitterness, maybe a little unforgiveness, just a little offense, you know, like you recognize it, it's still their problem. Because you've learned how to live a life managing some offense, convincing yourself that everyone else has a problem. And so then you begin to carry more of it. And the world begins to interact with you in a way that reaffirms the pain and the hurt that you're believing about everybody else. You know the term self-fulfilling prophecy, right? See, what you don't realize is that in that place, the very thing that he needs someone to come alongside of him, to shoulder that burden, to help carry that, to somebody to come in and recognize the pain that's in his life. He's there alone. Why is no one in my life? Why is no one? I need someone. And then he goes to interact with someone, and what happens? He experiences the rejection he's already afraid of having and experiencing on a basic level. And then you begin to feel justified by it because of the slow progression of convincing yourself that you can manage a little bit of offense and that it's normal and that's not a problem. And it becomes this thing that creates messes around you that is everyone else's problem. There is a better way. Come on, there's a better way. But we have to start with recognizing the patterns in our life that are actually creating this sort of painful world around us. Can I take you to a story in the Bible? Good, okay. Whether you're going to say yes or no, we're going there. So, no, I'm definitely, yeah, just exactly. All right, check this out. We're going to go back to one of the basic stories. I've talked about it in here before. It's Genesis chapter 4, but check this out. I have one older brother. This story always hit home for me, all right? I got an older brother who was perfect at everything when I was a little kid. Everything. He had perfect pitch. He played violin when he was 4 years old. Must I continue? I'll just stop there. You know what I'm saying? I didn't realize that 2.5 years of early development actually means a lot, you know, when you're a little kid. Just saying. But the reality is I would read this and struggling with, like, competition with my brother and just, like, the normal stuff. it was so confusing to me why Cain and Abel would go before God and one sacrifice was accepted and one sacrifice wasn't. And then people, I would ask the question, I was that kid in Sunday school, bless all of our Sunday school workers, where I was like, excuse me? And then I just would keep asking questions, but what about this and what about that? And so, sorry. Lord bless them. So check this out. I would do that, and the answers that I would typically get, and this is not necessarily wrong to teach, but it would always center on this issue that, well, Abel sacrificed sheep. He made a blood sacrifice that represented Jesus coming and forgiveness of sin, and Cain only brought in fruits and vegetables. And my but what was, where does it say that beforehand? God didn't tell them that that's what they were supposed to bring. Well, when they left the Garden of Eden, you know, God made a sacrifice and covered them in furs, and that was supposed to set a precedent. I'm like, okay, well, I get that, but it still doesn't say that in the Bible right there in that passage. I mean, you can build a perspective of that the story of redemption. So it's not necessarily wrong, but there is a hidden gem in this passage that I want you guys to see where this interaction between God and Cain that takes place. It says this in verse 4, Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. This is crazy. Cain's sacrifice was not accepted. God shows up and he's like, hey, why are you bummed out? Obviously, Cain's like, for reals? For reals, why am I bummed out? Because over here, special Abel, over here, his sacrifice was accepted. He's prancing in the fields all month long, dancing with the sheep, playing his little music. Ooh, you know. Do you know what I'm saying? I just recently did make a mistake. We will see if it's a mistake, whether or not these chickens start producing some eggs soon. But at the beginning of COVID, I got some hens, right? And I've raised them from the time they're little, and I whistle to them the same tune every time I feed them. And so now I walk outside, and guess what? 10 hens come running and flocking to my feet, and I have to be careful that I don't step on them or trip over them. I mean, we're talking, I carry axes out to go chop some wood, and here come the hens flooding around my feet while I'm carrying axes. You know, they don't realize the irony of that at this point. But it's like that. Abel's just like wandering through the fields with his sheep. Go back, think about what was the curse as they left the Garden of Eden. You're going to till the ground and you're going to reap thorns and thistles. By the sweat of your brow, you're going to reap a harvest. And Cain is over here sowing in the ground, and he's trying to get some fruits and vegetables. He's trying to get a harvest, and there's a sense of toil over that. And he glances over and sees Abel prancing through the lilies. No, I'm tiptoeing through the tulips. I'm not going to sing like Tiny Tim. Right? So there's this context. And God says, why are you bummed out? Don't you know if you do well, you'll be accepted? But if you don't do well, you won't be accepted. This word to do well is really interesting. It's the word yatab. I don't think I'm saying it correctly, but it's okay. It means this in Hebrew: to be good, to be pleasing, to be well, and to be glad. To be glad and to be joyful, to be well with, to be pleasing to be pleasing with. It means to make glad and to rejoice, to do thoroughly, to do something that's right or beautiful, to do it well and to do it right. You want to know why Cain's sacrifice wasn't accepted? He had a bad attitude. God looks at him and he says, don't you know, if you had been glad, if you had been rejoicing, you would have been accepted. But because you chose to not rejoice, to not be glad, your sacrifice wasn't accepted. And you need to know that sin is waiting for you at the door of your heart, but you need to rule over it. You need to rule over the door of access in your life. The enemy is waiting to step in and wreak havoc in your life when you begin to have a stinky attitude. When you stop rejoicing, sin is waiting for you. It's right there. But you need to rule over your heart. You, not someone else, not God, not Jesus, not your spouse, not your kids, and definitely not your job, but you are to rule over your heart and rule over the place of access that the enemy is trying to gain in your life. Our attitude is this open door that the enemy likes to take advantage of. It's interesting, when you think about your life as a living sacrifice, your attitude is a continual offering, either accepting and attracting heaven or the opposite, which is why sin is waiting for you at the door of your heart. Why? Because you just attracted it with your bad attitude. It's really, really interesting to think about, because we have to understand that in these small interactions, we have an opportunity. It's not that we bury our head in the sand and just act like everything's okay and, oh, the words just, everything's all fine, we're okay, we're okay. No, it's that you learn to steward your heart well. You have a bummer interaction, somebody hurts you or offends you or does something crazy, you steward that well. Why? Because your heart is a place of access. The enemy is trying to get a foothold so that you can begin to pick up weight and offense and carry it. Why? Because what is in your heart in this capacity, what you have to understand is what you begin to carry as offense will become a meditation of your heart. When you're carrying this weight, when Elijah's up here holding the kettlebells, everything begins to be sore. Everything's hurting. You know, you bump into someone and it's just like, man, my arms hurt. My hands hurt. It's a constant message in your head. And what you meditate on, what you focus on becomes a reality in your life. This is why it says in Philippians 4:8, I love this. Finally, whatever things are true, like your experiential truth in that situation, are actually true. Maybe I just keep going. You weren't ready for that. Whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report. Oh, man. Some of you guys need to check your news feed because it's full of bad reports. You're hearing negativity and criticisms and gossip, and it's stirring up a meditation of your heart that is giving the enemy access to your life to where you are going to be an individual that is carrying offense and creating a worldview that will wreak havoc for your life and put a wall between you and being able to experience a continual move of God's presence in your life. And you think it's everybody else's fault, man. Whatever is of good report. You're hanging out with a friend and they begin to complain and gripe. It's not that you can't be there and help them process, but you need to recognize, oh, this is not a good report. I'm going to rule over the place of access in my life. I will rule over my heart and the perspectives I'm developing in this conversation right now. I will refuse this bad report to influence my world and my perspective of an individual or a situation or a president or a congressman or a governor or a pastor or a leader or a spouse or a brother or sister. I'm telling you guys, whatever is of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. If there's anything, he's telling you right now, you need to be so aware that if you have to find just anything, any random thing, you need to find it and meditate on it. Well, I mean, take a look around really quick. Just think about it for a second. Do you have clothes on your body? Yes. Thank God. I only got a couple hours of sleep last night for whatever reason. I don't know. I woke up at 3:30 and couldn't go back to bed. So I'm very happy with the fact that I'm dressed this morning and I have some sort of wits about me. Do you know what I'm saying? Listen, if there is anything, I'm telling you, if your world right now is negative and like everything is crumbling, if the circumstances in your life is trying to give you a message that there is no hope, you need to find anything that is praiseworthy and meditate on it. Wow, God, I actually have clothes on my body. That's amazing. Thank you, Jesus. Wow, you're providing for me even in the basic things of having clothes on my body. Thank you, God. Lord, thank you, Jesus. You're a good God. You begin to meditate on, you chew on that. Why? Because you are protecting the door of access to your heart. You're protecting your attitude. Why? Because your life is a living sacrifice. It is continually offering off a fragrance that is either attracting heaven or attracting the enemy to take a foothold in your life. Your attitude. Are you guys hearing me? God is inviting you this morning to a place of intimacy. Listen, this is so beautiful. Revelation chapter 3, it says this in verse 20. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him and he with me. You need to understand something. God, the way he loves us. Think about this for just a moment. Cain. He offers a sacrifice that's rejected. He's bummed out. He's hurting. He's angry. He's frustrated. He just watched his brother's sacrifice be accepted. And he brought his stuff. He brought what he has labored for. He's brought what he put into the ground and sowed. He brought that to the Lord as an offering, and it wasn't accepted. And in that place, God steps in close and says, hey, what's going on, Cain? Why are you sad? Tell me, what's going on in your heart right now? Why are you bummed out? Why are you depressed? Why are you hurting? God actually reaches out for Cain in that place. Man, I used to read this story all the time, and I had like this crummy perspective of God in this interaction. I couldn't get a hold of it until I realized that God was desperately pursuing Cain for relationship. God was not worried about the fact that his sacrifice was a bummer sacrifice. He was actually there to coach Cain and to help him. Listen, Cain, you gotta get it. Buddy, your attitude, rejoice, be glad, learn to protect your heart. Are you hearing this? God is reaching out to Cain with his father's love of saying, listen, I don't want to be far. I don't want to be rejected or have this context in our relationship. I want to be close. This is how you do it. You maintain a good attitude. You learn to rejoice. Like, be glad. That's how you do it. And I'm going to be right there. All of heaven's going to be attracted to your life. God is standing at the door of your heart, knocking, saying, please let me in so I can help you process this. I can carry this burden for you. See, we walk around carrying pain and offense because we feel justified and we want that person to pay a price. We need recompense. Either what Jesus did on the cross was enough for you, for me, for everyone, or it wasn't. And if you demand payment for the hurts done to you, then you have a laundry list of people waiting to demand payment from you. If you want to walk in forgiveness and receive forgiveness from the Father in the context of being set free from that debt that you owe, you have to learn to step into the same place. Understanding that Jesus took all of the punishment, but he didn't leave you alone. He chased after you and said, let me carry this with you. Let me hold this for you. I feel like there is a thing happening this morning. When God releases a word, he releases grace to see it take place in people's life. He promises his word does not return void. If you're hearing this message this morning, there is a supernatural grace for you to let go of hurts like you have never been able to do in your past, to let go of offense, to let go of unforgiveness, to step into a place of healing like you have never experienced before. See, God is waiting for you. He's not offended. He's not bothered by the fact that you've been hurt and are holding offense. He's standing close. He's chasing after you, saying, let me hold that. Let me take that, please. Come on, why don't you guys stand with me? We can pray.